Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks for having me, Manny.
Thanks for, when did we first speak? Been a few months. A
couple months ago.
Yeah, and I was so glad that you reached out, and we had a great conversation about what we're going to talk about today, which is a lot of interesting things that are directly related to construction and building, I guess, housing and Canada in general, and dealing with politicians and associations and all kinds of stuff that's with the lovely word green and the lovely color green,
so
to speak.
That's right.
I'll try to stay less offensive on the show. Everyone knows where I stand on that, but I appreciate that you and I, we connected right away regarding the conversation. I wasn't like, Michelle, you're full of it. No, you're not. You're actually talking truth. You're sharing really some interesting, valuable information that if anybody were to spend a few minutes of their own time and sat down and just kind of dug into it, they would discover it on their own. That's all we're going to basically talk about, right?
So absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it. So Michelle Data's here. She's a consulting engineer from MNT Consulting Group. And I guess this show, we could basically talk about, hang on a sec, Reese Tile. I'm wearing their t-shirt today. So I always wear somebody else's t-shirt on the show. And it makes for a funny, interesting, when I go back in and out, they're like, oh, you changed your top. And I change my top for every show. So I guess, do we just call this show like a greenwashing or green initiative or green all kinds of stuff that's going on in construction?
Yeah, we can talk about red tape, green tape.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. We hear a lot about red tape these days, and we talk a lot about it. So,
well, it was ironic that when we chatted, I did a show recently where I have a really good friend, Ryan Borkowski, who's a siding exterior guy, but on his side job, so to speak, he likes to dive deep into what's really going on in construction. So he does a lot of data dumps, I've done three shows with him now outside of his just exterior specialist show. And the last one we did, we talked about where is the red tape? Where is the stoppage? What's going on? And it was really funny because when you and I talked, we discovered that it was municipal. It wasn't provincial, it wasn't federal. And he brought up the same fact that he started bringing up data and showing it that that's where all this red tape is happening. It's at the municipal level. It's in your communities. It's in the neighborhoods. And that's what's really going on. So as much as we see the political sphere out there and we're seeing the media and it's always pointing a finger towards the feds or the province, it's not really correct. It is and it isn't, but it's more about your local neighborhood ministers, people that are there. They're the ones that are kind of bringing this stuff in and forcing us to build a certain way that hasn't really been tried and tested and true, but we're still being told to just do it this way. And anybody that reads a little bit will just put their hand up going, but I've got a question. And that's where you and I come in, where we're going to talk about this.
Absolutely. I listened to a little bit of that chat, and I totally agree. I think a lot of us with kind of boots on the ground, those of us going through the actual processes for approvals, is we're going through the local levels, whether it's municipal, regional, conservation authorities, and those are the red tape processes that we're getting through, and all the way through to building permit to actually build these buildings that we need to solve these, housing demands that we're facing. And that is where we're getting hung up. And it is being downloaded, but at the end of the day, it is the local councils, local municipalities that are developing standards, regulations, policies that have legislative requirements, or they're being done on a voluntary basis. Mm. That we are facing and saying, hey, wait a second, we want to proceed with this, but we're facing these layers of red tape, green tape, and it's been a hard go sometimes to ask questions and have conversations around it, because the environmentally led virtue around it, it's hard to challenge when it's, well, we need to save the environment.
It feels like a stage. It feels like a stage with curtains, and you're wondering, what's with this performance? I don't understand what's going on here.
Yeah, and I guess on my side as a consultant, my background, I I studied environmental engineering. Like, I wanted to, like, save the world. I love Ontario. I, you know, born and raised. I, like, the environmental side of things is where my heart is. And I've just seen, you know, I've been doing this almost 20 years. And the first half of my career, it was, things were rocking and rolling. It was, we were getting a lot of stuff done. I do a lot of rural work, and we're building houses and getting things approved. And I believe with true sustainability in mind, really following the ministry requirements for stormwater, all the things. And then the last 10 years, it's been like, you know, stacks of regulation. And I know we've chatted about green development standards.
We'll dive into it. Yeah.
Those sorts of things. But adding layers where with my background, it's been hard to digest how that is helping.
To get a real understanding of it.
How it's really helping the environment, helping the overall project. And a lot of the times I find we go through some of these processes and it's really not changing much, but it's costing a lot and taking a lot of time to get through things. So that's been very interesting.
And there's a fine line. Like, there's a fine line when you've got clients and you've got a figure, and that figure keeps on creeping up to the point where the client is going to say, we're postponing this project.
Exactly.
So all of a sudden, now you start contributing to a queue that is going to have more projects on hold because we're being forced to add all these green things. And the client, and in all fairness, the client has the right to say no. And we're going to move, it's going to cost too much. But then I guess you get some people in that green sphere talking about it's just going to be more expensive down the line. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that for sure. I did a show with Roni Group, big corporation. And they had a project going on where they're planting trees for flooding that's going to happen 100 years from now at the foot of Lakeshore there. Mm-hmm. And my thought process is, okay, so you're taking care of this one area here where apparently in 100 years we're going to have excess water in the lake and it's going to rise. But what happens to the rest of the Lakeshore front? Should we be planting trees along that whole thing now? But in all fairness, when we built homes back then 100 years ago, were they thinking 100 years from now we're going to have all these issues? But they built them correctly. And now we're trying to build homes today with different products or different ideas, different mandates. And they're not proven. They're not proven for 100 years from now. We just assume they're going to contribute to helping us out later on.
Yeah, there's a lot of what-ifing happening. You know, we talk about like the lake level comment, you know, the climate change. I know some municipalities, if we're looking at rainfall, it's okay for climate, you know, adjustment, we'll just add 15%. Well, where is that? Like, let's have a little bit better understanding as a community, you know, myself included as a consultant. Like, I'd like to understand why we're modifying things from actual real data for the what if, and at what cost, again.
Like, it goes back to cost.
It goes back to cost, and you know, we can move over to something like EVs where we're, you know, greening fleets and this is the way. Well, you know, when I look back and like with a lot of my background in the civil side, things are slow to change. Mm-hmm. Things are very slow to change, you know, innovative materials, and this is kind of tried and true. This works. In a lot of places, we were just thinking about buying EVs 10 years ago.
Yeah.
10 years ago. And now we're talking about everything being EV. And like, that is the way we are going without, in my opinion, a lot of consideration around that. And again, at what cost? And are we thinking about what's to come? Because this is only 10 years. That's a very short period of time. And we're talking about developing subdivisions with just being fully electric, no gas. You know, I think Canada's pretty tough. Like, that's a little worrisome to me. Like,
especially when you've got a nation that has a lot of gas.
A lot of gas.
Natural.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And we have ways of obtaining that gas environmentally friendly ways of doing it, mm-hmm. where it's not going to impact on anything. And we could actually be selling a lot of that gas, factually speaking, to other countries, mm-hmm. which makes our country profitable. Mm-hmm. But we're not doing that. We're just pushing the green. Listen, trust me, in the 80s, when I first saw the very first EV1 and I was paying attention to it, I was thinking, sure, I'm a kid in my teenage years, early 20s. I'm a car guy. I'm paying attention to that. I'm like going, okay, that's a good idea for a constant repetitive travel path for a business owner or a person that works for a company, whatever. You're constantly doing AB, AB, and that whole thing. Great. But nobody ever talks about how Toronto has some of the highest hydro rates. Our TTC and subway structure, the way it's set up, isn't perfect, far from it, and it consumes so much power. Mm-hmm. So you now want to add, I've spoken to every single electrician on this show that has been, and I've had many Sparkies on this show, and I always ask them the same question, do we have the infrastructure to sustain an entire city with people driving EVs? And everybody's adamantly about, no, it will never work out. You'll have a city of brownouts. That's what you will have. But nobody talks about that part of it. They just say, consider an EV. But I will, me personally, in my 50s, I'm not considering a vehicle that's six figures. And that's a luxury tax now. You start adding other components there. It doesn't matter if it's saving the planet. And I still argue that portion too, because we don't talk about the full carbon footprint of an EV.
Absolutely.
Compared to an internal combustion engine.
Absolutely.
And the recyclable factors of an EV compared to an... So...
Oh, I'm with you. And I can say we bought some plug-in hybrids. So I guess...
Hybrids, in my opinion, make more sense.
So I drive a lot up more rural areas, you know, hours away. It's sometimes, you know, you're planning out, okay, like I'm going to fill up before I leave just in fuel. So we considered like... full EVs. We were, you know, again, the environmental side of things. And we bought two Mitsubishi Outlander PHEVs when they first came to Canada. And having those, great experience, you know, they were fuel efficient vehicles, happy with them. But I mean, the battery life in the winter, it pretty terrible. At least you had your 40 liter gas tank, you know.
What were you getting? Half? Right?
Half. So if we had a 50 something kilometer range, yeah, we'd be lucky if we had 25 kilometers on that plug-in hybrid. And we see lots of people now, you know, they're driving their Hummer electrics and coming up to meet us at job sites, and they're, oh, I forgot to charge before I left the city, and now I've got to stop for 3 hours and go charge somewhere because I don't have it here. And I mean, I agree with you. If you've got your commute and you have the infrastructure there, I appreciate it can make sense with a smaller vehicle. And
if you have like Elon's plan about Vegas and other cities that he's talking about, where you have designated lanes for EV vehicles that are literally be bumper to bumper driving to each other, they're autonomous. Great, because now you don't have the driver portion of it where they'll tap the brakes, create congestion, all that stuff. But that should be an option. It should be like an HOV lane where it's an option. Here's the EV lane. You guys go to town. Save the planet over there, it's fine, wonderful. But it don't mandate it to everybody because it doesn't make any sense. We've forgotten the fact that a vehicle was about freedom. It was about enjoying. Reason why I have a motorcycle. Like, it's just, I consider when I first got a motorcycle, EV versions of it, but I actually like the smell of burning fuel. I like the smell of asphalt. I like the smell of being out there. That's just me. Am I destroying the planet? Nope. I'm sorry, I'm not. And you have no proof that says that I am doing that. So it's just, I keep on, you know, there's a lot of links that you sent me, which I really appreciate you sent me, but there was one thing that I stood out on one of them. I'm trying to find it. But the new mandates regarding building, where you're having conversations about hard surfaces, mm-hmm. how much you're allowed on your property now. So it's not even a matter of you talking to a designer and going, I'm thinking about a walkway around here. I'm thinking about a driveway around here. No, your hands are tied now because the city's only going to allow you so many square feet of hard surface. And my thought process is, why don't we build the infrastructure to collect this rainwater a little more better and mm-hmm. more efficient and reuse it somehow? Because mm-hmm. it's rainwater, simple mm-hmm. as that. But we're not doing that. We want to just tie homeowners' hands on what we're allowed to do in our own home.
Yeah, no, even like single commercial's one thing where that's there has thing. Been a lot of control, but single family homes, even, they're saying you shall not have a walkway wider than 1 meter. You shall not have a driveway that at any point on your property exceeds 6 meters. Like, we are seeing policy at the municipal level that says what you can and cannot do from a, you know, a landscape perspective on your own property.
It makes you wonder, the politicians imposing this, I would love to see their dwelling.
Yes.
Because I don't think they have a 1 meter walkway or a 6 meter driveway.
Yeah.
I don't think they do. I'm just taking a guess at that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you can't, it's like you can't be doing that. You can't force everybody else and then you have a different set of rules now because you're in policy. Protect your investment one drop at a time. Your home or project deserves the very best when it comes to waterproofing. Trust nothing less than the service that guarantees you peace of mind and lasting protection. Meet Antonio, the expert behind Aquastop Waterproofing. Whether you're a homeowner wanting to keep your basement dry or a contractor in search of a reliable partner, Antonio and his skilled team deliver unparalleled quality and service. From the first site assessment to the final backfill, every detail is handled with precision, ensuring your project is completed on time, on budget, and to the highest standard. Antonio's team doesn't just solve problems, they prevent them. With a proven track record of working with insurance companies, educating clients, and using the best products available, Aquastop Waterproofing offers a solution you can depend on for years to come. Experience the difference with a team committed to excellence. Antonio and Aquastop Waterproofing are your go-to professionals for all things waterproofing. Get in touch with Aquastop Waterproofing today at 647-631-4144 or visit them at www.aquastopwaterproofing.ca. For direct inquiries, email Antonio at antonio@aquastopwaterproofing.ca. Let's make sure your property stays safe and sound, rain or shine. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
No, absolutely. And I think, like, I love sustainable solutions. I love natural solutions. I think we can save money. We can come up with really creative ideas. I think we're really limiting the ability for designers and architects, everyone in the implementation side to actually get creative. And we should be sort of enabling people and encouraging people to find sustainable solutions that are a win-win for everybody versus kind of shoving policies, forcing policies onto people that it not only creates like a procedural nightmare because we're siloing off. It's not just the building code. It's not just a site plan approval. It's not just now it's green development standards. And you see these documents and they are like, it's like textbooks and checklists and who's filling those out, who's capable of filling out these checklists. Like, it takes a professional to do it. That's costing more. And they're very often like handcuffing policies that say, like, you shall pick this, two of these out of this list of things. And it doesn't allow a lot of creativity. It creates a lot of frustration on the side because the developer, the builder, the homeowner doesn't understand it, and they don't prepare for that cost because there isn't a lot of communication about it. A lot of these green development standards have been put into play in the last 1 to 2 years.
It's ramped up.
It's really ramped up, and I know I believe a lot of it aligns with these like climate targets that have been set up and voluntarily been joined by the different municipalities through their kind of climate action plans, and like they've all signed up to be, you know, all these municipalities have declared climate emergencies.
You know, that word emergency came up a lot in Caledon and Aurora, all these municipality websites. That word emergency kept on coming up over and over. And I understood why. It was just clever marketing. And I would like to shake the hand of the marketing agency that was associated with that, because they came up with that word to associate it with climate and emergency. And it just like, it's not an emergency. I don't care how you slice this cake. It's not.
Well, and like, show me how, exactly. So a lot of the municipalities have declared that they are in a climate emergency, and we're going on 5 years for many of them now into a climate emergency. And this is where I struggle. What are we actually doing in response directly to, you know, declaring a climate emergency? And we have these municipalities, you know, doing official plan amendments, zoning bylaw updates, and there's no mention of this climate emergency. So I hear you on the marketing side. It's like, I like to connect the dots. I like to understand where these policies and guidelines are coming from so I can, you know, find ways to satisfy them, and I'm just not following it.
Let me give you a scenario. Did you ever watch the movie with Aaron Eckhart called Thank You for Not Smoking?
I don't think so.
This may be about a decade ago, right? It was an anti-smoking movie, but it was about three lobbyists: the tobacco lobbyist, the firearms lobbyist, and the drug and alcohol lobbyist, right? And their day-to-day on how they handle things, right? And what I feel right now, and I don't think it's been spotlighted yet in the building industry, I definitely think there's an ingrained building lobbyist going on right now. I think they're coming in and they're in bed with certain companies that provide certain products that are being connected to the emergencies conversation, how you should be using this. And a lot of it has, and I think I've been very vocal enough to tell people that the heat recovery stack in the building code right now is garbage. Mm-hmm. It, in a scientific application, when it's put together, when it's right underneath a shower, it has some theory behind it. But nobody builds a home like that. Nobody builds a stack underneath a shower application. It has to travel path to get to the hot water, to recirc, to come back. So it's a lobbying movement by whoever's manufacturing that product to get it into the code. So now we're starting to see more of these products being forced to come into the code, where I rather the government start talking about how, instead of them saying, you need to use Kleenex, I want them to say, you need to use tissue paper. Mm-hmm. So I want you to use a permeable membrane for your dwelling. And here are all the companies that have permeable membranes that work in this wall assembly. But the government never talks about that. They never talk about, contractors and designers and engineers and architects are smart enough that we always do homework. We always look at the industry and we go to trade shows and we talk to people. We go online and we do our own research and we discover products that are doing really well in other countries that have done it for decades. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that we're trying to push, but they're not on that list of what we're allowed to use. Mm-hmm. So then we get into a butting heads of heads with the government on, I want to use this, but you guys are telling me to use that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to use that. Isn't the game to be more efficient in general? So why can't we make the decision on which product that we want to use to be more efficient?
I totally agree. And I mean, on the electric side and the solar side, I think a lot of the studies, and even on the stormwater side, like, it's coming from warmer climates where it just doesn't apply here. It just doesn't work the same way. And with stormwater, for instance, we're talking a lot about permeable surfaces. And in some municipalities, they're asking for a certain percentage of hardened surfaces to be with permeable pavers. But then we have the conservation authorities who maybe have a better hold on what's actually happening in the watershed. And they're saying, well, if you're in tight soils, heavy clay, permeable pavers aren't going to do much for us here.
You're still having runoff underneath.
Or it's kind of going to sit in the granulars and bathtub a little bit. Yeah. And smart developers, contractors are going to see that and go, ooh, I don't want those permeable pavers there. I've got like hard pan underneath and we're just wanting to move water here. And I'm saying, yes, I agree with you. Like, we can't fight nature too much, but we want to try and appease these guidelines. But the conservation authority doesn't want it. But your green development standards say that you must have it.
There's a conflict.
What do we do?
There's a conflict.
Because I can't professionally say, well, I think you should do that, just because a standard, a generic coverall standard, says you should. I can't do that.
Homes are built on different types of soil, like the different types of soil just in Toronto alone.
Oh.
From two, three streets to the next street. We know exactly from the front street to Lakeshore, it was all, you know, there was fill there, backfill later on. Mm-hmm. Wait, and you have to go back in history and start paying attention to what exactly is there. But there's also water tables, too, in different areas of the Christie Pits. And I'm just talking about Toronto in general, but every municipality is like that. It's all designed that way.
Oh, we live in like a wild, like it's beautiful and wild, and we need to get on each site. Like my mentors, I'm lucky that we went out to site and we dig holes and we see what's going on and where's the water. And if it's spring, awesome. Like, let's see what's going on. High water, you have seepage through when you're close to the lake. We do a ton of shoreline work, waterfront work. I mean, 20 years in, I have good understandings in areas where we do a lot of work, but still let's go out and let's go take a look. And with everything being more desktop virtual, it has gotten a lot harder to get people to come out and let's all come to an agreement here, right? And again, that's the big difference I see from the first half of my career to this second half so far. It's trying to have reasonable, practical conversations around things versus just going by the book, by the checklist.
The book's never written by the boots on the ground, though.
Yeah.
That's the issue. That's the problem. You have lawyers and marketing people writing the book, but you have boots on the ground on the surface discovering. Mm-hmm. So why can't we listen to boots on the ground and going, this area here, this parcel, this is what we discovered. This is what we know for a fact. This is how we should build on this now, structurally speaking. Mm-hmm. Then we can talk about design. I think we just talk about climate at the end of it, where we can contribute to it.
That's right.
But I also believe that, I mean, there's the argument about wood burning fireplaces now. They're limiting, there's no subdivisions now that are going to have any wood burning fireplaces whatsoever. They're trying to get rid of the natural gas fireplaces too. Mm-hmm. But there's no discussion about wall assembly.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, that's where you should be. When I'm underpinning a house, mm-hmm. do I talk about the kitchen countertops? Yeah. I don't. I talk about the density of that clay, that soil. I need to figure out what is it going to be sitting on.
That's the most important part.
Yes.
That's the most important part.
I talk about dirt.
Yep.
Before I talk about concrete, I talk about dirt.
Absolutely.
But the book doesn't tell you to talk about dirt. It just tells you about the carbon footprint of that concrete needs to come from a certain area, and you have to put so many air. Like, they talk all that crap, right?
Absolutely.
Which, yeah. Listen, I think a lot of the companies in construction are doing really well. I think they're very smart on trying to streamline their process and try to get these heavy machinery models or these vehicles moving around the construction site in the cities and everything like that more efficiently. I think they're trying to navigate, you know, and streamline their process so then they can get driver, go to A and B, and then possibly before they return to A, they probably do another job on the way back to A. So that becomes more efficient. So stop tying our hands and let the boots on the ground tell you what we see. Mm-hmm. If you're in a war zone, military, you're not going to just constantly listen to a general who's never going in the field and not discovering what's going on. As soon as a soldier comes back at you and they discover what they saw, they tell you what they experience. And now you make an informed decision on what to do moving forward. I'm not trying to compare construction to war zones or anything like that. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying boots on the ground has far more value than a book that's being written by lawyers or marketing reps.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're so siloed. You know, we've siloed ourselves. And like, I love connecting with the contractors. You know, I'm a design engineer. I love the construction build side of it. We do building. I believe it's important to stay in it. You know, we do some building, and I think that keeps me being a good designer, to know how it gets built and to make sure I'm keeping it efficient and staying on top of things. You know, we have mutual friend, and I have a number of contractors that I'll bounce things off of, and hey, am I missing something here? You know, but I mean, we see on the bureaucratic side, like they're not even sometimes connecting very well between departments, which yeah. I think is where things...
They use it as a guide. Like, they use it as a disguise, I mean.
Yeah.
Like, building departments, they don't speak to each other. I'm like, how's that... If you were building a house, you don't think if each trade didn't speak to each other?
Yeah.
How would that go?
Yeah.
That becomes parliament, right? It just, it doesn't make any sense at that point. For me, it's really heart-wrenching for me, and I'm not boots on the ground anymore, but I still get invited to sites, and I love being on sites, and I love experiencing that. But I can see it in the faces, especially of the younger trades. They're hungry to build better. They're hungry to absorb the knowledge of what we should be doing correctly, but based on the overall picture, not just on the silo, like the micro points of view. And when they start, I start telling them, what do you think of this? And what do you think of this? And here's coming this on the OBC. And you start getting other companies like Rescon and stuff like that talking about these new initiatives that are coming down the pipe. And they're not even disputing these initiatives. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, this is what's coming. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but the construction has been historically about dispute.
Yeah.
We've challenged, and we should continue to challenge. So when I see these kids who really want to challenge, but then they're being tied, like, well, this is what the code is telling me what to do. But you have the right to dispute this and bring it up to whoever's going to be a part of this mm-hmm. and discuss other options. We should have the right to do something else if we could, and then get someone else to sign off on that to say, this is a much better way of doing this.
Yeah.
Meet Felipe, the visionary behind Versa Homes, a name synonymous with excellence in construction across British Columbia. Felipe's passion for high-end craftsmanship, sparked by his mentor Dan Zecklin, drives him to deliver exceptional results in every project. At Versa Homes, every detail matters, and Felipe's unwavering commitment to precision ensures that each project meets the highest standards. Client satisfaction is more than just a goal, it's at the heart of everything Felipe does. He's dedicated to making the construction process smooth and stress-free, keeping projects on time, within budget, and meticulously organized. If you're looking for a builder in British Columbia who values quality and client care as much as you do, look no further. Discover what sets Versa Homes apart. Reach them at www.versahomes.com or call them today at 778-65-BUILD, B-U-I-L-D, or connect with them on social media under @VersaHomes. Versa Homes, where your vision meets their commitment to excellence. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah, it's gotten incredibly more difficult to be able to do that. Even within the municipalities, like the openness for conversation when I speak to people.
They shut it.
They really shut it. And even public meetings, you know, council meetings where you used to get a lot of people out and be able to discuss, there's a lot more closed meetings and public meetings that are fully online where, you know, I've attended public meetings where I'm working on behalf of a client and I'm speaking to an application and I know that there are people that are in opposition to something. And I don't know if I'm speaking to five people or 5,000 because I'm just here virtually and that's the only option. I really, like, I think that's not helping the industry.
No.
I really think we need to, like, connect more, feel openness. So young people coming up too who are
to see possibilities
and hear other, you know, points of view, like your show. There's other people out there that are speaking their truth, and it's like that's reassuring, that's motivating, that helps other people like me come and, you know, speak on this because there is some maybe like soft intimidation that way, that if you don't fall in line and agree to all of this, you're kind of like wrong and
you're shunned at that point. And it's kind of funny that all this stuff that's happening, I think it's desperately doing two things. It's reducing the amount of projects that get started. Mm-hmm. So clients back off. Rightfully so, because finance is still a decision maker. And second, you're reducing the workforce. Mm-hmm. Because most people that get into construction, they get into construction to build things. And they don't build things to just last a week. They build things to last a very long time. Mm-hmm. But if they question certain practices, then they're wondering, this is not going to last. We saw that in many failures of new products that were introduced, and we were told to do it a certain way, and it was incorrect, and then they started failing. So they started questioning. And nothing is more important, I think, than a person who has experience by trying it once, twice, keep on going. The people that are mandating all this stuff don't even try it once. This is where I get really frustrated by it. So it becomes a challenge at that point, and it's just, you got to keep on questioning. 100 years ago, we didn't need the government. We didn't need the permits. We didn't need any of this stuff. But yet those structures still stand to this day. And those are the structures that people come and visit and look at and study architecture-wise and consulting-wise. They pay attention to what was built. But you've got too many marketing machine individuals dictating how this new version of what those old structures were built like.
Yeah, I think like that removal of the ability to be creative is really taking away the innovation that we have had, we can have, you know, we have, it's, and I agree. I think it's going to push people out of the industry because we don't feel like we get to be creative. Like we have to be robots and follow a series of checklists. And we think that AI is going to design things to meet the checkbox, and I personally don't want to do that. I like the creative aspect of it. I like looking at the site and it's fun.
Yeah. And you can take it to the next project. There was one of the links that you sent me about green development standards, GDS, climate friendly measures. And there was one thing that stood out to me. So they just talked a lot about the key benefits to including reduced energy use, greenhouse gas emissions from buildings and transportation, increased preparedness of buildings and neighborhoods to climate impacts, improve health and well-being of residents. And that one stuck in my head because they kept on talking about the improved health and well-being of residents. And my question to the people that are putting this together is, why are you not attacking processed foods?
Get me started on that.
Why are you not attacking energy drinks that we know for a fact are killing people? Why are you not attacking other forms other than building structures that are actually creating more healthcare victims? Like, that's what I don't understand.
Oh, and I'll add one to that is, what about all this pharma in our sewage? In our water bodies.
Well, I was going to go to the next one where they talk about there's initiatives about we need cleaner water, better water, and all this other stuff. And I'm like, why are we not attacking the water system in Canada in general? Because it's a fact that it sucks. Like, it's not healthy water. And I've had people that have been on the show from other countries, have come into Canada to visit, and they've said to me, I can taste it in your water. And they're comparing it to a European country. And so it takes a person who's never been drinking it all their life here in Canada to experience it. But so if you start telling the construction industry, you need to be building this for our health, for better and all this other stuff. But what about everything else that you guys are not, you're turning a blind eye to?
Oh, absolutely. I think, like, for me, the sewage and septage is a big one. With the increased pharmaceuticals, you know, we think about dialysis and more people are on multiple pharmaceuticals, and we have a large population, not in Toronto obviously, but outside, that are on well and septics, and we're not educating people to maybe not, you know, be being cautious. Are we researching, exploring what that is doing, you know, with people with on-site septics? And we are still land applying sewage to farm fields, right? Like, in our province.
Why are we doing that?
And are we testing this? I know that certain crops are excluded, but are we doing enough of a deep dive there? Because to me, I care about that with what I'm feeding my family. You know, knowing that, I choose organic for most things, and that is like high priority for me over a lot of these, you know, that low-hanging fruit versus, like, if we can get there, great. But when we know already that half of the cost of construction is in soft costs, and we need more affordability in housing, why do we continue to tack on this kind of high level, like high level, maybe low benefit, arguably.
I would say zero benefit. Because the thing is, nobody that's actually talking about, neither you or I, we don't know what it's going to be like 50, 100 years from now. We have no idea. We don't. I'm curious myself what Toronto is going to be like, or even Ontario in general is going to be like a century from now. But I think if we continue down this path of forcing people to use products, when's it going to stop? Is when they start failing because the theory behind them at that time wasn't correct. Mm-hmm. But then at that time, sorry, we made a mistake. We have to go this route now. That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Why didn't we at least listen to the boots on the ground that have experienced certain things, and they should have been dictating what was going on next?
Yeah.
It becomes challenging to be a builder, to be anybody associated with building a structure.
Oh, absolutely. And like the risk is huge. The uncertainty, 10 years ago, we have this list of requirements, can you guarantee, even as a consultant, a fee for that? Okay, sure. And now it's, we can get through this and we hope, but it seems like, we have all these, and I know new provincial policy statement, we have new regulations that are trying to, stimulate housing. But the changes also have a ramp up period to the authorities to actually get up to speed. Okay, now how does this change our approval process? And it spins things around there. And so the schedules are all out of whack. And again, the financing, people trying to get into projects, it gets more and more risky, and more people are just leaving the industry. So then we're left with fewer contractors, builders, developers, because it's gotten too hard.
I would have a lot more respect for the powers that be that are dictating where the construction industry is going to go, or supposed to where they want it to go, if they were just blatant about it and just told me this message I'm just sharing right now regarding emergencies and the word climate was brought to you by this corporation. I would rather just them, Robin Williams was famous for saying that politicians should have all the logos on their suits of all the companies that are endorsing them, right?
Like the race cars.
That's totally. I would have a lot more respect for the politicians if they did that, because then I could be hearing what they're talking about regarding what our wall assembly is going to be, what our concrete, whatever is going to be associated with the structure. And then it's brought to you by companies A, B, C, D all the way through, right? And I'm like, well, that makes no sense. That becomes a Nancy Pelosi kind of, you're a conflict of interest now. Mm-hmm. It's insider messaging is what it becomes, which is incorrect to do that. Mm-hmm. Because guys don't, if it's a Dewalt tool, Milwaukee tool, Makita tool, it doesn't matter. It's still a tool. It's still going to do the job. But let us decide on which one we're going to use.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's tricky. And I mean, on the consulting side, I know I sent you a clip kind of speaking to the consulting. And I know, so it's a Trump clip with Joe, President Trump clip with Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And he speaks to how the environmental aspect of things can really hold things up, and to what end. He speaks to, if there's a little puddle, and in Ontario I'd say that's often a ditch or a little slope, where you end up held up for years sometimes to study this man-made ditch that may or may not have some habitat of benefit. And it turns into a project that can cost tens of thousands of dollars to study and get through approvals, where I think if we all kind of get on site and look at the ditch and say, what can we do here? That's a win-win. And I mean, he speaks to the kind of soft corruption in the consulting world, because it is quite a make work project.
Yeah, it is.
I appreciate the motivation to get that work. And I do believe, that I think there are quite a number of critics, fair critics, that say, the 20 plus reports, I think it's Richard Lyle who speaks a lot about this, like the 20 plus reports to get something approved it we have to bring a little bit more reason into this.
Yes.
Again, and not just to generate a list of 20 reports that, you know, of that you can pull a paragraph. Like a lot of my clients will send me all these reports, and like that's what I am hired to do, is to look through and find like what do I need to take from this 100-page report, because I cannot possibly get through this.
Let me paint you a question here, Michelle. If we were to build CN Tower today, what ridiculousness would be associated with building that structure today?
Yeah, I think that's where we limit ourselves on the creativity. Like we can't build these things. And I have this conversation with architects I work with designers I really enjoy, and we'll joke about these beautiful, you know, historic buildings, and it's like, well, like if a ditch is like a Red Side Days habitat, like we don't stand a chance with much. Like we can't do much. That part for me is like, that motivates me a lot, because I like the CN Tower, these structures we have, and if we take away all of that, and you know, we're celebrating standardized, pre-approved building type, you know, homes. Like that's one of the building code, like pre-approved designs.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That's depressing for me.
Why would you want to live in there? There's no soul in the home now.
Yeah.
There's no soul in the structure.
Yeah, I just, that's where I see that it's getting going. Taken. You know, if you, okay, this is all standardized, pre-approved, like it fits in this box and that's what we can do. And that's not, like, that's not the...
Attention homeowners and businesses. Are you looking for top-notch electrical contracting services you can trust? Consider the expert tradesperson behind Effect Electric LTD. They take pride in delivering quality, service, and professional installation on time and on budget. From Kohler generators to main service upgrades or network data installation, they do it all. With years of experience and a commitment to excellence, Carlo and his team at Effect Electric LTD are your go-to professionals for all your electrical and generator needs. Effect Electric LTD is an authorized Kohler home energy generator dealer. Kohler has air-cooled 26 RCA units, the quietest, the most powerful, and exceptionally durable generator with 109 amps max power on liquid propane. Custom color options, camouflage options, and every generator Kohler makes is built to last and is equipped with a commercial-grade engine. Call Effect Electric LTD today at 416-508-7725 or visit them at effectelectricltd.kohlergeneratordealer.com. Let's build something great together. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. But then on the flip side, you start seeing fiascos like the Science Center.
Yeah.
You start seeing fiascos like Ontario's Place. And it's clearly obvious that there was an exchange of money to get authorization. But yet I can only imagine what, if you were to go down this standardization that they're trying to create right now, it's almost like they're rewriting history for the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get enough buildings approved on that way of doing things, mm-hmm. then it becomes the gold standard to build that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst standard that mm-hmm. it could be built that way.
Yeah.
Because now we're not paying attention to being creative or try to think about new ways of doing something.
Yeah.
We're just dictated to do something that has been approved incorrectly to begin with.
Yeah, we don't even create space to question, to get creative. And I mean, for the younger people coming up through, like, I don't want to send that message.
No.
I mean, I get labeled a disruptor, this and that, and I'm like, I don't know, when I started, this was just the way we did things. You know, you ask questions, and now you're, like, labeled something differently, but it, like, no. Like, let's reframe that. Let's adjust that here. Because if we don't, yeah, okay, we're going to put all of this and, yeah, okay, like, just...
Are we getting to the point where fines are going to be threatened now? If we don't... if I'm a developer and I've got attitude and I don't care and I've got enough of a wallet that I can just say, I don't care, mm-hmm. I'll write a check and I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. Are we going to just get to the point where you're just going to get constantly fined over and over and over, like you're parking a car in the wrong spot mm-hmm. and you're just going to get a stack of yellow tickets on top of it?
Yeah.
Or are we going to have to get a politician friend in our corner to stop this crap?
Yeah.
Because certain people get away with it. I clearly see it.
I've never seen so many sites where people have gone ahead without permits because they've kind of just gotten tired of it. Or maybe they financially were too leveraged to, like, that was, it's that, or I lose this. I'll deal with it after. I've never in my career seen so many people proceeding that way as I have in the last couple of years.
I don't blame them. I would do the exact same thing.
Yeah. 10 years ago, I would have judged those situations a lot different than I do now. I have a lot more understanding for where people are coming from. And when I hear their stories about how they got there, and, you know, they deal with it, right? You get through, you pay your 2x building permit fee or whatever, and they're okay. That was better. That's cheaper than me carrying this for 18 months before I can get a building permit. I'm like, I hear you. I understand.
It was still built correctly, structurally sound.
Well, a lot of these people, if they're, you know, if they understand the process and they are caring people that care about the environment, they're building their home perhaps for their family, they've had engineers design it, vet it, certify it. I mean, there are municipalities that is the process, right? It's like a self-regulated. Out in BC, there are more situations where it is more self-regulated. If it's engineered designs and then you register it, it is accepted because they're trusting that if licensed professionals are designing it, reviewing
just
it.
Just give me the paperwork to send it off and sign off.
Yeah, not...
So we're streamlining the industry ourselves. Or we're being policed to streamline it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unfortunate because I honestly believe that it's distracting people from ever entering this industry now.
Yeah.
A lot of these younger people don't want to pick the fight. I'm older. I don't care. I can pick a fight, right? It's just you get to that point where I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I'll challenge anybody. It's like you have to. And I did it when I was a constructor. I was still challenging inspectors. I was challenging building department. Mm-hmm. It's my right to challenge it. You can't just, I get it, I see it in the code, I understand that, mm-hmm. but I can challenge it if I have every right to challenge it.
I'm the same way. I really try to have conversations and collaborate with building inspectors, with staff. Like, I have great relationships with a number of CBOs and inspectors and planners and like engineering departments. And I mean, I value those relationships and the municipalities that allow that. I feel like we flow through projects so well and everyone wins.
And you enjoy the process.
And I enjoy the process. It's when you take all that, the joy out of it. Because
why am I gonna bother?
Building's fun. Like people aren't going to get into it if it's just.
I had a great inspector in Toronto. We got along right away. I saw him more often than I should have because I had a really bad neighbor. And so she would call and complain. And then he had to always come. And he was nice enough that I was like, who called? And he would just be like, and I'm like, thank you. I appreciate it. But then as we're building and we're going through the process again, and I've got to go through my standard inspection process and everything. And we were doing one of the first homes where we were doing a permeable membrane blown in cellulose. Right. So he was like fascinated by it and he did his inspection for other things. But we started the process of doing that. And then he started doing a whole walkthrough and we had a whole conversation and he was asking me about the science behind everything. I called the actual consultant that I had on the job. I got him on the speakerphone. And it was great. It was people building something better.
Yeah.
And it wasn't being dictated or mandated.
Yeah.
It was like we were, and he was just taking notes and he was photographing. He was asking permission if I could photograph. I go, dude, I'm not hiding anything. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, you know that he's keeping it for himself or even keeping it for other projects. So if he comes across it again, he's a little more educated on it. And I like that in the industry in general. Do we not want to learn because we want to apply that to our own dwelling or to a friend's dwelling or you know, anybody? We want to help and assist with that. That's why we want to do it this way.
Oh, yeah. We have to keep learning, and not because we're, you know, told that it has to fit this code. It's like, it's what really works. Like that more organic process where we all learn.
It's going to be challenging to be a tradesperson, constructor, GC, designer, architect, engineer 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, if this all gets proved and moves forward and nobody challenges, it's going to be extremely challenging to be profitable.
Yeah.
That's the key thing here. As much as that we're fighting the system and they're doing this for the betterment of us and to be healthier, it's costing too much money. So then as a business owner, you won't be able to be profitable now.
Oh, yeah. No. And as a business owner, like we see it, our fees go up, but we're spinning around the time it takes following up, chasing.
Authorization, follow throughs.
Understanding the new regulation that popped up halfway through, and you know, of course, the developer doesn't want to. They didn't carry that in their pro forma. So you're trying to work with people and work through it. It is very frustrating.
I wonder what would it be like if you eliminate. Well, I don't want to say eliminate. Remove all the people that are applying these policies. Mm-hmm. And introduce boots on the ground people to follow through with these policies and just yay or nay these things.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. I think we would have more building going on. We would attract more people to come into the industry. We would be building much better buildings, healthier buildings, aesthetically more pleasing buildings. Yeah. There's a purpose behind the way a building looks when you visually see it.
Oh, yeah.
There's certain materials that connect with you as a human being.
Absolutely.
You know what? And I'll even go as far as animals. Animals, right now, I love it right now because there's a little chickmunk. There's a hole in my shed. And this chickmunk is just loving his condo that he's building inside there. And it's not bothering me. I'm like, go ahead, keep doing it. I don't care. And every time I walk into the shed and I see what he's built more of. And he keeps on just grabbing his, you know, the weeds and the sticks and everything. And he's building. And I'm like, he's doing it because he's loving what he's building. And I don't have a problem with it. But if I was bid back government, I'd come in there going, you need to be doing this and this and this and this. And I guarantee you the chickmunk's going to go, the hell with you. I'm out of here now. I'm going to find someplace else. But that's as immature as that is, that's really what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're diverting, like, development charges, taxes.
It's one third.
It's so expensive. It's like these green initiatives and what we're doing at the municipal level in these studies, in these like kind of monitoring, you know, kind of data harvesting, if you might, on a lot of these programs, that the data is going somewhere. To these more entities.
I don't see where the development charges are actually improving the neighborhood.
Well,
I don't see it at all.
Yeah. Like, do we, and I think it's at what point do the actual communities get to have a say? Do people really want this stuff?
They should have a say.
We should have a say. Do we want all of the buses? You know, you see all the buses going electric in municipalities. And I'm saying, okay, you're deciding to invest all of this. Well, where is the power coming from? You know, like, we know what our grid is made up of. Is that really greener here? I don't follow it to being an improvement, but it's costing a lot of money.
What do you think is going to happen eventually? Like, I feel as if this might collapse.
I'm hopeful that we will see that it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that there will be more accountability for what it is costing our communities. Like, critics of these programs are saying this is like, okay, urban centers, they make it work. There's enough. It's a big enough machine. But when you're asking rural Ontario municipalities to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by 2030 and then net zero by 2050, they're going to die a slow death. That's what critics are saying. And we're not promoting severances. We're saying we need to protect all the farmland, like a blanket statement. But I'm called weekly by landowners, farm owners who want their adult children, who are having children, to come and build a home on their property, lop off an acre so they can also help on the farm. The farm dynamic is changing, and they are more efficient on smaller acreages. So why are we so limited to severances, to like some infill,
some intensification? What's the reason why they're not allowing that? Like, what's the, that's the question. Why are you not allowing me to do this on a farmland? It's a partial portion of the land. Why can I not have the next generation of my family to operate this farm, continue operating it, mm-hmm. and build a home right here? What's the reason? Give me what's the answer?
The preservation of that prime agricultural land.
It doesn't change anything, the land-wise.
Well, and often they want to put a house where it's underutilized farmland, where it's scrub, it's maybe a little more slope
than
Toronto
they want. That's what Toronto was centuries ago, in any major city, that's what it was.
Yeah. But that is the critic, that we're wiping out our farmland. Whereas to me, if you understand more about permaculture versus the cash crops, what is the sustainable path here, right? Like poor soil health or a more holistic, integrated approach where we can have smaller farms that are actually a lot more environmentally conscious.
I've said it over and over, all subdivisions should have a farmer's market in the center of it.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Yeah.
That should be mandate. But that's too good for people. That's too healthy for people.
Oh, it's like a real holistic community development versus just like condo. Like I'm more of a country girl. Like I like the rural living. Like our backyard is full of gardens and we try to grow what we can.
It's the real green.
I think so. I don't know, from what I've learned.
Yeah, it's the real green.
Yeah, and it's enjoyable too. It's good for your health.
Yes.
It's, you know what you're eating. It's my kids know more about what grows out of the ground and what a plant looks like than like they talk about corporate logos. When our children can recognize more corporate logos versus...
Yeah, don't get me into Jaguar. I don't want to talk about Jaguar right now. Three-way the world. These little puppies. I'm speaking from experience. I've actually installed these and I love these. Three-way prefabricated inside drywall corner. The first one-piece solution for perfect, crisp corners every time. With Three-way, you'll improve your quality, save on labor, and cut down on time. Traditional methods require 3 tapes, lots of sanding, and high skill. But with three-way corners, they install in just a fraction of the time with fewer steps. It is adjustable for any angle, reinforced to cover gaps, and designed to blend seamlessly into the corner. Say goodbye to pesky touch-ups and hello to flawless finishes. Try three-way today and revolutionize your drywall game. Perfect corners every time. To purchase or check out some how-to videos to see the installs in action, visit threeway.ca or connect with them at 306-514-3768 or drop them an email at threewaytheworld@gmail.com. Connect with me, TCL, and stop by the studio and get a free pack on us for anyone to try. And trust me, I'm telling you, you'll love it. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. But you brought up a good point about these targets, and there was one link that you sent me where I found it extremely interesting that setting the target comes before developing a plan or implementing that plan. How do you set a target before you've decided on what you're going to do? I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's what set it off for me. That's what started my kind of dive down the rabbit hole, because scientifically it just didn't
make sense. And where did that number come from? Like, 2030, 2050. These are the numbers that we're hearing, right?
I think it's called the Paris Accord. It's like it's a global agreement, and you know, Trudeau's kind of doubling down on this agreement.
But that number 30, I don't like, we're 2025 next year.
I know.
We're a month and a half away from 2025.
I know.
So you have less than 5 years, and that, you know, he's not going to be in power unless there's some sort of theft. But how do you come up with this number? And it's okay. So you had a bunch of so-called leaders come up with this number. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand. Like, you should, I go back to boots on the ground, come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. Here's a bunch of, when we built Sky Dome in Toronto, there was like four or five different architects that were submitting designs for it. And then the city got to choose on which one we think we should move forward with. There was a, like, they started developing a plan.
Yeah.
And then Elliston got involved and they started developing a plan on how to build this structure that's never been built in Canada before.
Yeah.
They didn't just say 2030, Sky Dome will be up. Yeah. Well, they actually did that with the LRT. And then we're still waiting. And there you go. There's another, they came up with a date before a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we used to go through more like a design charrette and for new settlement area developments, like let's bring the community in, let's sketch on, and good ideas come out of that, right? The collaboration.
Discussions, not arguments.
Discussions, but we have been basically told, and the municipalities have agreed to these targets now. And they've partnered with these global entities to participate under the guise of being, you know, an environmental steward. To me, you know, it's they think it's for the good and it sounds great, but it hasn't been enough, you know, consideration for how that actually looks and what's actually happening. And even when I work through the climate action plans, they're often quite vague, and now I feel like they're being just fully downloaded to the boots on the ground, the developers, builders, kind of unknown to them a little bit, right?
Well, the big enough developers will just figure around.
They can deal.
Yeah.
Right?
They have the pocketbooks to deal. That's the problem.
But it's the small to
single
mid.
Single family dwelling, who do we, we're David. Like, we're such a small fish and we don't have pocketbooks to fight this, right?
That's right. And I see people get halfway through a project and they're just, okay, I got to get through this. Some now are pushing back. The ones that see it doesn't make sense. And I like to think our neighbors to the south may help bring a little bit more clarity to the situation that this is not where we should be going right now.
I just don't understand how a country like Canada has such an abundance of natural wealth, mm-hmm. lumber, gases, whatever you want to consider it, mm-hmm. and we're not utilizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame. I totally agree. We it's very much a scarcity mindset. I think like when you read the documents, it feels that way. And we fail to recognize the abundance that our country has. Absolutely. Like we have so much space.
I see the failure whenever I start seeing towers go up that should never have gone up to begin with.
Yeah.
But I see the pocketbooks of certain people being lined because these structures are going up. Mm-hmm. And now Toronto has no identity. Toronto had an identity. We were growing in the 70s and 80s with proper things. Mm-hmm. But we don't now. We have a bank account. Toronto's a bank account for a select group of people, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hear like the just complete, like single family homes are just not being built. And I think of family, you know, me, myself having a young family, it's like that hopelessness of people, their hope to afford a house one day, have a family, you know, if you're living in a little condo, and that's all you can envision yourself living in. It's tough, you know. I came up and I entered into the industry kind of fresh. Like I didn't, my family wasn't in the industry. I enjoyed it. I came into it, and I knew if I worked, I could buy a house and do whatever I wanted, really. Like, and it's, that's sad for me to see that. And that motivates me to kind of advocate for a return to something that can enable more single family dwellings, more community, you know, the farmer, like the community gardens, things like that, that people want, like that, that supports families.
I see subdivisions nowadays because I still catch myself driving around at different processes of the construction stages, and they just look horrific to me. They just, like, they don't look inviting. They look all the same. And there is such hard surfaces, and then you've got twigs for trees that you know that will die because they won't be taken care of. When we can thrive, we can build a community. Like, I'm seeing playgrounds, if they're even existing, smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's the helicoptering from the government where it's like, you can't have monkey bars, you can't do this, you can't do... There's all this restriction. Like, there's nobody... I don't hear the sound of a baseball bat cracking a ball.
Yeah.
In communities. Yeah. I don't hear it.
Yeah.
I grew up with that. I grew up with hockey cards and spokes. I grew up with that. That's basketball. I don't hear chain hitting a ball. I don't hear... That's all these mm-hmm. things that are... That's climate change, in my opinion. Those are the things that you should be implementing in communities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These sounds that we're missing. We had a water specialist on the show a few months back, and frogs are gone now from waterways. Now you don't hear frogs anymore.
Yeah.
Why? Where? They didn't catch an Air Canada flight to the south or something. Where the frogs go?
Yeah.
They're attracted to waterways. So it's like, why don't we start paying attention to what's really going on with our land instead of what's going on with your checkbooks and your pocketbooks? And
yeah. What do communities need? A little bit more back to that versus how does it, again, how many people per hectare? And it's just, it's box targets and lacking that community.
Homes are getting smaller. Walkways between homes are getting smaller. Eavesdrops are touching each other. Parking spaces are getting smaller.
Yeah.
Lanes are getting narrower. Like, it's just, it's like more and more congestion. And, mm-hmm. and that just adds to hatred between people. Mm-hmm. That's all it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yet the ones that are dictating all this stuff, they're not living in the same kind of mindset. Their dwellings are a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Their neighborhoods are a lot. I would love to, like, just argue it to municipalities and go and challenge this stuff. And I'd start by showing them a T-square going, can anybody tell me what this is? If you don't know what this is, you should not be having this conversation. And I guarantee you the whole lineup of people would have to leave because, or they'd try to Google it, photograph it to try to figure out what, Siri, tell me what Manny's holding in his hand there. What's the purpose of that tool or what have you? That's where I start to challenge. Like, you know this because you get on sites and you talk to. I know within seconds if anybody is full of shit or if they know what they're talking about. And I'll respect you if you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you're just regurgitating crap that has been passed, that's not building.
Yeah. 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 You need to be able to act on your feet and, like, it's about solutions and surprises happen and you got to roll with things. And I mean, that's where, okay, we've done this, but let's rethink this for a second. Let's look and evaluate some of these decision-making, you know, things we've done and reevaluate how we go forward and maybe make things a little bit more open to alternative views. Not everyone wants to live in a subdivision on a 20-foot lot, 30-foot lot. I don't even know what they are.
When an extension cord tied to your vehicle, like, I don't... Construction is about problems. We are notorious for having problems. But our experience and our crew contribute to solving every single one of those problems.
Yeah.
I've never seen government solve a single one of those problems. I've seen tradespeople, designers, engineers, I've seen all of them, even inspectors, I've seen them solve problems
mm-hmm.
together,
yeah.
right? And you can't say that you solved it on your own because your experience contributed to solving that problem, which you got from working with other people that have problems.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we really need. We need a nation of problem solvers working together.
Yeah,
they're just creating problems. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And we're about solving these problems. So we have the right to dispute them telling us how we should build.
Yeah.
I really hope it changes. I really hope that it collapses. Listen, I'm not an EV person. That's not me. That's how I am. I'll never be an EV person, right? It's just, if you want, but you should have the right to purchase it. If you want to do that, then great.
I agree.
Right? But don't tell me I'm a bad person because I'm putting gas in my vehicle.
Oh, yeah, no. I drive all over. I don't feel safe being an EV. I'm not going to be an EV person.
I don't. My mind's got to go creatively elsewhere instead of figuring out how many more kilometers I have left before I'm stranded on the side of the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't, Toronto with Chow and, you know, outlawing two-stroke. They want all gas or battery-powered trimmers and lawnmowers now. They want all this stuff. And I'm like, Toronto, we've had brownouts.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have more brownouts.
Yeah.
Unless we start finding some kids that can come up with really creative ways to get more energy, more power.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be talking about making everything electric.
No.
Right?
No. And like, again, what's on the horizon, right? Like hydrogen, different technologies. We don't know. I feel like we're putting all our eggs in one basket, and that doesn't feel like the safe approach. Like for our own home, when we built it, again, like as an engineer, I tend to go towards what is safest. And I mean, we work on a lot of really rural properties where like a backup generator is a mandatory. Like there's no question if that's going in. Like we put in a wood stove in our house. Like if the power goes out, we've got our Yodel and we've got our gas furnace. You can survive
through a cold winter.
And we've got, you know, a variety, you know, the energy diversity. Because if we have full electric subdivisions and we have a brownout, that's a safety concern.
That's a major health concern.
And if our cars are requiring electric, like, we are stuck.
Where are you going to go to next to charge it? What are you going to, like, Christmas tree a bunch of extension cords all the way from your house to some other neighborhood that doesn't have the brownout? Doesn't power? Yeah. I was excited when I had Carlo from Effect and he was talking about generators might go the hydrogen route. Mm-hmm. That Kohler's already working on hydrogen motors for standby generators.
Yeah.
My ears started perking.
Yeah.
Because 10 years ago, my ears perked when I saw BMW talk about hydrogen cars.
Yeah.
But the government didn't want to move forward with the infrastructure on it.
Yeah.
And there was a slight argument about, you know, Hindenburg and all this other crap about it's going to explode, it's hydrogen. I was like, that got debunked right away. And
yeah.
Then when you started paying attention to, you have droplets of water expelling from an exhaust, I'm like, how is this not a viable option for people to consider?
Yeah. Yeah, more of a priority that way. I mean, it's really, I do feel like there's something to the hydrogen story that we're not
something,
seeing because there, I believe Toyota has
something coming out soon.
They're quite focused on hydrogen and they were the
hybrid leaders,
but they didn't decide to go full electric.
I know.
Right. And so they focused, it seems, again, not my expertise, but they seem to have focused on hydrogen. A lot of people are focusing on hydrogen, but I mean, there's not the, you don't need the fuel source. You don't.
It's the marketing machine,
it's
right?
It's the marketing machine.
It doesn't, hydrogen doesn't contribute to the word emergencies, doesn't really contribute to the word of climate, right? It's like, it actually checks all the right boxes, right? It's unfortunate. Like almost 100 years ago, it was Tesla, real Tesla, wanted to give everybody unlimited power. That was his mandate. That's what he wanted to do. But corporations got involved and going, but you can't price that.
Yeah.
And here we are now.
Yeah.
Everything's being priced.
Yeah.
Attention contractors and construction professionals. Do you feel like your expenses are way too high? Imagine cutting your spending by 28%. At Schooley Mitchell, they dig deep to help you save on essential expenses that could be impacting your bottom line. Their risk-free analysis allows you to concentrate on your trade while they find those savings for you. Don't let extra expenses keep you from achieving the success you deserve. Reach out today to schedule your risk-free analysis and unlock your savings. Find them at www.schoolymitchell.com/office/AEGIUGGIO/about. Or reach out to them at erica.giugio@schoolymitchell.com. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
And the electric, and I just don't see, you know, we have subdivisions, we're talking about going full electric with our vehicles in big cities. And then we have places like data centers that have huge electrical requirements. And how are we going to solve that? And I see, I saw something about Google, agreeing to go with nuclear substations in the U.S. to power their new data centers.
Their servers.
Yeah.
But nobody's raising a climate nuclear emergency arm up for that. Nobody.
It's very quiet around all of this.
Well, how much power does Google have?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just there's all these, you know, red flags, questions I have, and yet we're still so focused on putting everyone in electric cars and electrifying everything, teaching young people
electrify
our future. You know,
is that going on in the classrooms?
Yeah, I was reached out recently to kind of be part of a young engineer mentorship program, and it was like the programming was like electrify our future, and I said I can't get.
I was asked
I
by
can't
a Canadian
get behind it.
A Canadian government agency asked me to come in and speak positively about heat pumps, and I was like, "Have you listened to my show?" Like, I'll never say a positive thing about heat pumps. I don't care what you say. I will never say, I'll say maybe aesthetically they look okay. That's about it. But I can say the same thing about an AC unit.
Yeah.
I can say the same thing about a furnace.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, but a furnace is gas powered. Oh, so you don't want me to say that.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing like crackling wood. Like, I just.
Yeah.
I don't. It's a challenge. It's an extreme challenge. And I don't like that certain people. I can't take anybody's advice on what vehicle I should travel in or where I should live when they are jet setting on private jets.
Yeah.
I can't.
Me neither.
So you can the whole Davos, whatever crap, bunch of monkeys out there that are dictating that when they have like, I don't know, hundreds of private jets showing up there annually to do mm-hmm. that, let mm-hmm. alone how many times they travel around the world and creating that pollution. Same, our own prime minister is doing the exact same thing, where yeah. I'd rather look at a leader like Javier from Argentina, where he's like mm-hmm. going commercial,
yeah.
at, you know, a regular seat traveling mm-hmm. to get his messaging out there.
Yeah,
I would respect and listen to that individual a lot more than I will private jet boys.
Yeah.
Most of them are boys. That's the problem. And I think they are little boys.
Yeah.
So there is a line drawn in the sand, and I think that we should all be speaking up without any fear of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should just be speaking up going, I'm sorry, I disagree with that.
Yeah.
Do your homework. Do your own homework.
Yeah.
Look into it. I'm not trying to convince anybody otherwise. I'm just saying it doesn't make any sense to me how a lot of things from my youth are disappearing.
Yeah.
And I don't like what... Even yesterday alone, I had two conversations with two people about... You thinking about leaving? You thinking about leaving? You thinking about leaving? I had a DM again from another friend of mine, and he's from Portugal, he's from Azores, and he's like, Manny, I'll send you some listings there. And I was like, do it. I already know what's like I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. Because what are you going to do? What's the option here, Michelle? It's like you start finding other countries or other parts of Canada that will allow you to do some of these things secretly, where you go back to what you talked about. You have clients that won't even go down the permit route to avoid the city from being a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I really don't want to run away from it.
I don't. I love Canada. I think Canada is a great country. I think that I've never, like, there's maybe a handful of assholes in this country, right? like people that you just come across. Unfortunately, sure. A lot of them, you know, they're sitting in a room with green carpet. And it's just like, that's where they are. But they're not doing things in our best interests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that government should stay away from construction. I think government should listen to construction.
Yeah.
We know better. I'm sorry, this industry, we know better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen to the people. Bring them back to the table.
Yeah.
Bring people back to the table. Have conversations. Collaborate. You save money. You save time. You get stuff done. You get your fees.
We're the most efficient individuals ever.
We are.
We have to
be. We have to be.
We don't want to be like swinging a sledgehammer 20 hours in a day. Like, we know what's involved in that.
We don't want to move a pile of dirt here and then move it again here, right? We are well-oiled machines that we want to get stuff done. We are motivated to get things done.
And that's the purpose of building, is you want to complete it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want to be proud of that building after the fact too.
Yeah. And you want it to last a long time.
You don't want to be ashamed of it. Like, oh, we had to do this. We had to do that. Mm-hmm. Increase the budget by 30, 40, 50, 60%.
Mm-hmm.
For what? For something that you think might happen 100 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be around, so.
Yeah. And if you want to try that out.
Go ahead.
Cool.
Do it on your own dwelling. Let me know how it works out 10 years from now.
Or on, you know, if there's a developer that wants to do it. Go for it. It's the mandating of it. And it is these municipalities with green development standards, with the climate action, it is a voluntary program.
For now.
Yeah.
I just don't like these titles, a PCP milestone framework, the Partners of Climate Protection. It was like that you brought, like you sent me all these things, and I was reading this and I was like going, what am I reading?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this has got nothing to do with construction.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's like, that's the head, and then it's trickled down. And if you look at, like, it's Partners for Climate Protection, ICLEI, which they've sort of rebranded as a local governments for sustainability management, but ICLEI originally was the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. If that's not a sort of oxymoron, like the International Council, because it's...
For local.
For local. And I say local knows what local needs, and let's empower our communities. And next time, you know, I do think... Our councils really matter right now. Our municipal staff really matter. Let's re-empower people at the local levels to make change, because it's a pretty easy choice to actually decide to step out of these partnerships. It's a resolution at the municipal levels. To say we no longer want to participate it, we can't afford it. It's for now, it's not working for us.
Are people doing it on Facebook? Are they creating communities where
there are some groups? Yeah there are some groups. Things? Yeah, but I mean, it is the David, right?
Mm.
It's unfortunate, and I speak with some people advocating for that, and I mean, they're being denied being able to make delegations, and it's gotten really tough to have a say. And again, that's where I say those more public forums, like if we're going to actually vote on these things in a more transparent way, I think that's where community members, if they know what they're agreeing to, what their council members are signing up for truly, then hopefully people will, you know, speak up a little bit more. Just everyone's under so much stress and pressure, and there's been so much going on for so long that it's been such a sort of, I feel like it's just snuck in.
I feel like they've been adding a bunch of things as a group,
mm-hmm.
just to get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just sneaky, right? Which I don't like.
Yeah.
I think that if it affects our health,
mm-hmm.
and if it affects family and communities and everything, it should be like one point, one discussion, determine whether it's good or not for the community, for the individual, mm-hmm. for the Canadian citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bunch of new ideas you just throw out there because you've got a logo on the back of your suit because you're being paid to push this,
mm-hmm.
which is unfortunate, right?
Yeah. Like our priorities right now, like mental health, homelessness, like We have some
We need to focus more on that.
We need to focus on that. And I just see too many funds going towards this, where it's just costing everyone too much. We need to be building houses. We need to be helping our mental health crisis, our addiction crisis, our, you know, we need to recover from what we've been going through.
I've said it, every single Canadian Forces service person deserves a free home.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but they do. I'm not talking about a mansion. I'm just saying the average Canadian dwelling.
Sure.
They deserve a free home.
Sure.
That's the minimum that they should be getting.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have service people homeless living in their cars.
Yeah.
Like that should be front and center all over the media and an issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, we're not, you're right. The priorities are not being portrayed correctly.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Mm-hmm. So I hope it topples. I hope it just collapses on itself. I hope there's failures coming here and there. You know, like I just hope that all happens so people can start understanding that it is. And unfortunately, until it's in your doorstep,
yeah,
it won't really affect all Canadians. And I think what that we may, I may have mentioned to you on the phone when we were chatting, it's like the threat of, you know, capital gains on your primary residence. I mean, that's going to be the straw because that's going to show up on every single person's front doorstep.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But it shouldn't take to get to that.
No. And people do seem to wake up quick when they're trying to build their own home these days.
Especially with children.
Oh, yeah. No, it's...
You don't want to leave it worse than you found it, right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, our government is leaving it worse than they found it. Mm-hmm. So there should be reprimand there for that. Mm-hmm. So just stay out of construction. Let construction's doing really well. I could deal with the corruption of construction. Mm-hmm. Certain big entities that are just growing into the billions of dollars, I can deal with that because they're giving jobs, right? I would still like them to pay boots on the ground a little bit more for the effort that they put forward and to assist a lot more on mental health and see less suicides and things. I would like to see that, but they're doing well. Right? But you're really affecting the single dwelling, small mom and pop construction businesses out there. You're really affecting them now.
Yeah. Yeah. Which are employing a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's Canada as I knew it, right? Not just the big condos and the big subdivisions that every street looks the same. I mean, we have great communities.
We need to build great communities again.
Let's get back there.
Thanks, Michelle. I want to do the 12 questions with you. I really appreciate your time coming on the show. I think we covered quite a bit. If we offended anybody, I don't give a shit. You can send all the email to me. I won't read it. It goes right into my junk. I don't care. This is Michelle Data, consulting engineer. Say hi to Brock for me next time you see him. You're probably going to see him before I do, unless he DMs me, right? MNT Consulting Group. You ready for the 12 questions?
Yeah, sure.
What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
I was thinking about this one, and I like, you can use an eraser on the drafting table or a sludgehammer on site.
Mr. Lloyd Wright.
That's right.
Yes, it's a good one. What is your least favorite tool?
I tend to go towards, well, my first thought was most accounting software, just not my favorite tool.
I'm the same. What do you miss from your childhood?
My first response was no internet. The slower days.
Dial up.
But I think in terms of childhood, I really try and listen to my child, my inner child when I'm on site. Yeah. That's motivating for me. You know, I still get excited about it. So I try to go back to that and relive that.
I like that. What construction sound do you love?
I like big trucks.
Machinery.
Yeah.
I love seeing the face on the operators of any big machinery.
Yeah.
When I go, when you guys going electric on these things?
Yes. Oh, I love my kids on the big, you know, a cement truck comes by our house they're out with this. And
kids don't do that on the school buses anymore.
Oh, my kids do.
I used to do that all the time on the school bus. And you get the one odd guy who would actually bowl it. And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Good. Thank you. You just made my year.
Yes.
What's your favorite beverage?
Coffee, water, yeah.
What turns you on and off in construction?
On, collaboration, off, blame game, pointing fingers.
Favorite curse word? We've been keeping
Shit. Yeah.
Sometimes when I don't hear that much cursing, I'm like, okay, we'll keep it clean. Your favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation?
So I like vehicles, but if I could pick one, Malibu 242. It's a boat.
It's a nice one.
Yeah.
What color?
Oh, I'd probably go with some like.
Because I know black. What men would choose. Normally they go with black, right?
Oh, full black, too
hot. Yeah, yeah. Men would
too hot and show the scum line in the boat. I'm a little practical too. I think I go like kind of. We have an Axis boat, which is like Malibu engine, but the more Toyota of the Lexus, and like the brown interior and blue exterior, some white gray. Yeah.
My dad's was brown.
Pardon?
My dad's was brown.
What was brown?
His was brown. His Malibu was brown.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, as a kid, I still have photographs of it. Okay. You know, those old.
Like the ski boat style.
Old, old photos. And I was just like, why don't they round the edges of photographs anymore? What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
I think I always wanted to be an architect. I love the design side of things. Yeah.
Challenging these days, though.
Yeah, and I think I would be an architect for myself, where I can, you know,
enjoy it.
Yeah, and not it's such a like it's a subjective thing, right? As an engineer, it's a little bit easier to be like, well, this is a little bit how
and
it
then
is.
Wait for the clients to come along, going, would you design a house for me?
So I do like we do that with our own projects, get into the design side, but nice. Yes. Yeah.
Definitely. What profession would you not like to do?
Anything like in the mines or anything too high up in the air in a crane or I don't love heights.
I got a friend right now. He's out west in the mines. He started in the mines, got into construction, into production, then construction, and now he's back in the mines. But I've heard my share of pretty scary stories.
Yeah, boots on the ground, like full respect, you know, like if I go out for a couple hours and these guys working on the side of the highways up in the sky, you know, I respect that. I like my feet on the ground, but we need everyone and
we need more of them.
Yeah.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
I'm so glad you listened to me.
Michelle, absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for reaching out, and we got a whole Kevin Bacon, a lot of people, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this because I think it's very important.
Thank you for
more
having
more people
me.
Need to speak about this stuff and speak out, right? So come back anytime, we continue the conversation.
Thank you
and
so
do
much
more, do more damage for good. Yes. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
We're out of here.